President Obama spoke yesterday to the victims and the families of the mass shooting at the movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. He honored their request to not say the suspect's name.
When you have an opportunity to visit with families who have lost their loved ones, as I describe to them, I come to them not so much as president as I do as a father and as a husband.
We will hear from a variety of guests during this hour, experts on psychology, sociology, crime and gun issues, all giving us their perspectives on what happened on Friday, how we can process this, and whether we can prevent such a tragedy from happening in the future. The shooting has renewed the debate over gun control and gun-free zones for concealed carry laws, and we will wonder if any changes in gun laws are called for in the wake of this mass shooting and other questions that come to mind. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, July 23rd. What are your thoughts, your reactions to what happened at the movie theater during that midnight premiere of the new Batman movie when the suspect, 24-year-old James Holmes, set off smoke bombs and then began walking the aisles shooting viewers, killing 12 and injuring dozens more? Holmes is in custody and reportedly not cooperating with police. As we heard in NPR News, he faces his first court appearance today. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. As I said, we will be welcoming in a wide variety of guests just for a short time each, and we will certainly put on your calls if they pertain to the topic, and in between guests, we will just take your calls. Neil Kay joins us first, Assistant Clinical Professor of Psychiatry and Human Behavior at Jefferson Medical College. He specializes in forensic psychiatry. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you. What leads people to do mass shootings such as this?
Well, we're not really sure, and I know you're going to hear from a variety of experts this morning, and anyone who's really an expert is going to hopefully admit that we don't really know. Part of it is it's a very rare behavior that makes it hard to study, and each person is an individual. So there tends to be a profile that the media and the public jump on board with that often turns out to be inaccurate. One of the first things you'll hear is, well, the killers are loners, and that almost never turns out to be true. I know we've heard that Mr. Holmes was a loner. I will bet that turns out to be false as things go forward. I think part of what you will see is intense anger and depression in this individual. And obviously I've not interviewed him. I don't know him. But if you think about one of the concepts of depression is its anger turned against the self, turned inward, that if that goes the other direction and comes out and it's intense, it can be explosive anger. And really what we clearly can say is the behavior demonstrated is explosive anger.
Mm-hmm. I have seen headlines that say, you know, obviously the shooter was mentally ill, but more so than just depression, people thinking this person must have been, you know, a severely psychotic. Do we know that to be true?
Well, we don't know. Apparently, he is not cooperating with the police. There's a lot of guessing about that, and we don't know. There's two things I think the public should remember about mental illness, maybe in fact three. So there's three different definitions we might use. One is sort of the lay definition of, oh, he must be crazy because anybody who would do something this horrific has to be crazy. But crazy that way, crazy in the way a layperson uses the term, is very different than in the way the law or medicine define the term. So the term crazy isn't really a medical term. You mentioned psychotic. So psychotic being out of touch with reality is a medical term that a psychiatrist or forensic psychiatrist would use. Now, whether or not someone is psychotic and not responsible from a medical perspective is very different than how the law in Wisconsin defines insanity. So the public is going to need to grapple with and have to understand sort of the three different definitions of insanity, a lay definition, a legal definition, which is what's going to matter when the case comes to trial, and a medical definition, which will get bandied about both in and out of the courtroom by experts.
Yeah. Does this suspect resemble other past shooters in similar cases in any way?
To some degree, yes. But again, I'm hedging on that because I don't believe that what we have learned so far is necessarily true. Again, in these cases, the initial reports about the individual often end up to be false. So if you go back to the other Colorado killing, the Columbine killing, a lot of what we were told by the media about the perpetrators in that case ended up to simply not be true once all of the information was available. You know, we've been told that this gentleman is a genius, a brilliant academic career. I will not be surprised if, as the information actually comes out, there are some holes in that. Yes, he had some great accomplishments, but there were other areas where he had significant weaknesses. We know that although he's supposed to be brilliant, he was withdrawing from his PhD neuroscience program, possibly because of academic problems. And so there's a concern there. There's also a concern that his functioning was deteriorating recently. And again, that leads people to start to wonder, was that deterioration in function consistent with the onset of a more serious mental illness? That's simply guessing. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Nobody has enough information yet to actually know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Is it possible to profile mass shooters to try to pick somebody out before they do this?
Not in any reasonable way. And what I mean by that is the profiles that get developed fit millions of people. And to date, no criminal has been apprehended because of profiling. So although the FBI has a large profiling unit, and I'm friends with some of the folks there, the reality is it doesn't work very well. And in this case, and it's one of the great concerns, is we have a lone gunman, it appears. And the lone gunman, the lone terrorist, is almost impossible to ferret out and identify and prevent. Much different than a terror cell that's operating where multiple people have to communicate and leaks can occur. When you have someone operating purely alone, it's almost impossible for law enforcement to catch wind of it.
We have some callers lining up, and one of our callers has a point that perhaps Dr. K, you might be able to address. Rick in Milwaukee. Hi, Rick.
Oh, good morning. Before I make my main statement, I'd just like to clear up a matter of definition, and that is that the AR-15, which has been mentioned quite a lot, is not an assault rifle. But that's not my main point. Back in the 1980s, I was walking on foot through the Marquette University campus, and I came across a young man who'd taken an entire stretch of newly poured concrete and scrawled some enormous manifesto in it with a stick. And so I struck up a conversation with him, and I determined that he didn't seem violent or anything, so I convinced him to give me his photo ID, and I got his name off it, and then Monday morning I called up the authorities at Marquette University, and I explained what I had come across, and they were very, very grateful to me, and they said they would talk to the young man and make sure that he got some kind of help. I think we need as adults, to sometimes intervene in these situations where we find people that are obviously not acting in full contact with reality, and intervene in a gentle and helpful sort of way and see if we can contact the appropriate authorities so that something can be done.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about that, Neil Kay?
Rick, I absolutely agree with you, and unfortunately there aren't enough people like you willing to do that in today's world. So if we could be kinder and gentler and be more aware of people around us and offer to help, that would be great. But the reality is most people are not willing to do that. We've all seen the videos of children run over by cars and people stepping over the body in the street and ignoring it, people being afraid to intervene when someone's being molested or robbed in a subway. And certainly the larger the population center, the more like a city it is, the more anonymity exists and the less people are willing to get involved. In smaller communities, you have a better potential for that, but a lot of people just don't want to take what they perceive as a risk of approaching a person who might be looking crazy. And there's an association the public has between craziness, crazy-looking behavior, and violence. And the reality is most people who are seriously mentally ill are not violent. But again, the media, the TV shows, the public likes to equate crazy with dangerous, and that's actually rarely the case, but it is a common perception.
Yeah. Is there anything else, Neil Kaye, based on this Colorado shooting that you think we should keep in mind this morning?
I think we should keep in mind the victims. I mean, the one thing that really bothers me and I know the families a lot is that at the end of the day, everybody remembers the perpetrator and the perpetrator's name, and our society glorifies violence. In fact, that's what the whole movie was about that he was going to see, was the glorification of violence. And our society does that, and it's really a mistake to do that. We need to remember the victims. We need to deal with those problems. And I think Richard's point about being more sensitive to people who are having problems and struggles around us might be the one thing a society could do to help reduce the likelihood of another one of these.
One more question based on that. Do you think that we will learn that this particular suspect and perhaps others like him have spent too much time watching violent media or playing violent video games?
I am not one to blame the violent video games and media, although there is some scientific literature that shows a correlation. A correlation is not the same as cause and effect. What I'm more concerned about is the media producing copycats. And again, the glorification of these violent individuals by the media clearly produces copycat behavior, and all of us, including myself, need to be cautious when we do interviews and broadcast this subject, because the likelihood of copycats and somebody who wants to up the numbers and be even bigger, badder, meaner, and thus more famous and powerful is a real concern.
Boy, yeah, let's hope not. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Neil Kaye, Assistant Clinical Professor of Psychiatry and Human Behavior at Jefferson Medical College. He specializes in forensic psychiatry. We'll talk some about the fear that some of us may be experiencing this morning. Some people said following the shooting on Friday that they would never go to a movie theater again. Are you experiencing that kind of fear? We are reacting to hearing from a variety of guests during this hour on the mass shooting in Colorado on Friday. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be mostly sunny, hot, and humid today. A slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in southwestern Wisconsin this afternoon. Highs ranging from the mid-80s in the north to the upper 90s in the south and east. There is a heat advisory for portions of south, central, and eastern Wisconsin from 10 o'clock this morning until 8 o'clock tonight, meaning that the heat index is going to feel a whole lot hotter than the actual temperature heat indices getting into the 105-degree range again. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 7 o'clock, it's the State Capitol Report. We will welcome in Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Sean Johnson to catch us up on the new Senate majority, the governor's reaction to the drought, and more. Then Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen will join us after 7:30 to talk about gun permits and training for the state's concealed carry law. We will also ask him to react to the Colorado shooting. That's in our State Capitol Report coming up between 7 and 8 this morning. Right now, we are hearing from a variety of guests. We have rounded up a number of guests with different perspectives on the Colorado shooting, and we're welcoming yours, too. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Coming up in our next half hour, we will hear from guests who have specialties in sociology and criminology and gun laws. That's coming up after 6:30. We just heard from a guest who specializes in forensic psychiatry. Now we will welcome in Philip Chard, who is a psychotherapist and columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's the author of Nature's Ways, Experiencing the Sacred in the Natural World. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, with an event like this in the news, does it make many of us more anxious and fearful?
It does, in part because it kind of flies in the face of something I call daily denial, which is that idea that when we walk out the door every morning, we tell ourselves it being a bad thing, isn't going to happen to me. And events like this undermine that sense that we can predict the future a little bit and lower our risk of these kinds of bad things happening to us or those that we love.
Yeah. And how can we overcome this kind of fear or anxiety?
Well, I think it's important to remind ourselves that those kinds of risks, while they're awful and tragic and make, you know, great headlines, don't happen to most people, that most of the time we are going to be okay. It's also important not to let fear control our lives. I heard you mention earlier that some people are saying, gee, mm-hmm. I'm never going to a movie, you know, again. And when you allow these kind of events to control your behavior, you really are giving in to that fear, and it begins to control you.
Yeah. So how do we get back to normal?
Well, people do it in different ways. I mean, sometimes we just let the news sort of fade into the background of our consciousness and go back into that daily denial mode. And other folks kind of stand up to it. It was interesting. I went and saw the Batman movie yesterday with my son in Chicago, and that's kind of a way of saying, you know, I'm not going to let this run my life, or I'm not going to let people like Mr. Holmes tell me what I can or cannot do. So I think it's important to reassert one's freedom to, you know, do what you want and not be controlled by that fear.
Is there anything else that you'd like to have us keep in mind on, you know, after a horrific event like that?
Well, you know, we all kind of want order and predictability in our lives, and when bad things happen, we always ask the question, why? You know, what was behind this person? What were they thinking? How did this come about? And I think that trying to answer that question, why, is another way that we try to get a handle on those fears and allow ourselves to regain that sense of safety that we all want in our daily lives. So, you know, suffering is a lot more difficult for us when it doesn't make sense. For example, we know from studies that when people react emotionally to natural disasters, it's a very different kind of reaction than you get when they react to human-induced disasters like the one that was just experienced in Colorado. It's harder for us to come to grips with and find peace of mind with human-made disasters, particularly when we can't make sense out of the motives or the reasons behind them.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Philip Chard is a psychotherapist, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are rounding up a variety of views on the Colorado mass shootings, and we're welcoming your reactions, too. What's on your mind this morning following that tragedy in Colorado on Friday? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Joe in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Joe.
Hi. I'm reflecting, and someone's already mentioned about the violence endemic in American society. And I'm not saying that it's not important to deal with the individual involved in this tragedy. But on the other hand, I guess my point is that violence is endemic in this society in every way possible. And this young man obviously is using this as a solution to his own problems, whatever those might be. And by that I mean that if you look at our political system, the amount of money that's involved in it, it's a form of violence. If you look at the healthcare system, where people are being denied healthcare, if you look at the class structure in our society, 1% have so much of the wealth. The tensions between the classes, the middle class is blaming the poor. Violence, in other words, seems to be something that's political, social, economic, and all levels of society. Healthcare should be a right, as it is in most of the Western world. Here we're still fighting over whether we should have it. That's a form of violence. In other words, violence seems to be in every way part of American society. We have 25% of the world's prisoners now. We didn't have that 40 years ago. We had 5% because 5% of the population. We're still 5% of the population, but we have 25% of the prisoners. That's violence. Violence in our prisons are another. In other words, it seems like everything in the society, the idea of the worship of wealth.
I'm sorry, Joe, because we got a lot of other callers.
Yeah,
so
I realize that.
What do you think?
I'm saying it's a societal problem. It's not just, it's reflected in what happened to this man or what this man, the horrible thing mm-hmm. this man did. But if we ignore and just obsess about this one individual and say, yes, he did a violent thing, and we ignore our own problems in this society, that's the difficulty. We never sit down and see, well, why is America such a violent country?
Thank you very much for your thoughts on that. We will talk about societal issues coming up after the news. We'll be welcoming in Stan Stojkovich, who is dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. He's also a professor in the Department of Criminal Justice at UW-Milwaukee. We will also hear from Nick Clark, who is chairman and president of Wisconsin Carry Incorporated. And we will also hear from another guest who will help us process this tragedy and explain it to children, especially, who are probably wondering what in the heck is going on. And we'll continue to take your reactions, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 6:36 on this Monday, July the 23rd. We are talking with a variety of guests about the shootings in Colorado on Friday. I'm talking with experts on psychology, crime, and gun issues and more. And we're welcoming your reaction, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What are your thoughts, your reactions to what happened at the movie theater during that midnight premiere of the new Batman movie when the suspect, 24-year-old James Holmes, set off smoke bombs and began walking the aisles shooting the viewers, killing 12 and injuring dozens more? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The suspect, by the way, the man accused in that Colorado movie theater massacre, is scheduled to make his first court appearance this morning. James Holmes will hear the charges against him. He faces suspicion of first-degree murder, but could also face additional counts of aggravated assault and weapons violations. This shooting has renewed the gun debate in this country. And yesterday on Fox News, Senator Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, spoke out.
People will talk about unusually lethal weapons. I mean, that could be potentially a discussion you can have. But the fact of the matter is there are magazines, 30-round magazines, that are just common all over the place. You simply can't keep these weapons out of the hands of sick, demented individuals that want to do harm. And when you try and do it, you restrict our freedom.
So we will ask our guests about the renewed gun debate as well. Our next guest is Stan Stojkovich, dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, professor in the Department of Criminal Justice at UW-Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, just before news time, we heard from a caller, and I wanted to just to address this issue to you, who said that, yes, this is tragic, but we shouldn't be focusing on this one individual. We should be focusing on the violence that is endemic in our culture. What's your reaction to that?
Well, there is a strain of thought that argues American culture in particular is extremely violent. Violence, however, is not unique to American culture. It's something that is part of the human condition. There are differing extremes. Clearly, the American experience, going back to our roots, initiated in violence, and we've been a violent culture for many, many years. Yet, I would not single the United States, for example, out as the only violent culture in the world. Today, the highest homicide rates in the world are in Central America. Honduras, for example, has very, very high homicide rates. So, yes, I would agree on the one hand that violence is part of our culture. On the other hand, I wouldn't say it's singular in terms of the United States being the only culture in the world where violence has been historically expressed in very extreme ways.
Can we say that the violence in media, violence in video games, violence in movies like Batman could have contributed to this kind of crime?
Well, possibly, but it's very hard to make that claim. The research on this is somewhat ambiguous. There is some research that supports that assertion. There's other research that suggests there's no link. It's very difficult to measure something like that. Clearly, that is part of the culture, movies, television. Those types of things are there for a reason. They're obviously there to make money on the one hand. They're to entertain us on the other hand, but the reality is that those kinds of theories or hypotheses are very difficult to prove.
Is it possible to prevent this kind of crime?
Well, if you got a person who is obviously has serious mental health issues, I think the senator's statement is correct. An individual can get these weapons fairly easily. We did have a ban up until 2004 on automatic weapons, these kinds of high-powered automatic weapons. That basically went away. We have not decided to reinstate something like this. If you have a person who is so severely mentally ill and has a mission, like in this particular case, this gentleman planned this out very, very well, it will be extremely difficult to stop this kind of person. That is definitely the case.
Along with Senator Johnson on Fox News Sunday, Senator Dianne Feinstein was also on that program debating for reinstating this ban on assault weapons, and especially the magazines that can contain as many as 100 bullets. Do you think gun laws need to change to make these types of guns less available, or the amount of ammunition that was available to him?
Yes, I do believe in that personally, but I'm one of 317 million people in this country. The fact of the matter is we have tried to control guns through legislation in various forms for decades, and we've been very unsuccessful. Current polls even suggest people don't want any additional laws. They like the laws the way they are. I don't agree with that, but I think politically it's virtually a dead issue even now in this election year. We must understand there are hundreds of millions of legal and illegal guns in this country, more than one for each individual in the country. Trying to get this genie back in the bottle right now, I think politically and practically, is almost impossible. I hate to say that, because I do believe checking this freedom is extremely important, particularly the grave, serious injury that has obviously been incurred upon people. And while it's still a rare event, the fact of the matter is I just do not believe the political will and the practical wherewithal is actually there to make it happen.
All right, we have some callers on the gun issue. Let me go to David and Ettrick first. Hello, David.
Hello.
Yes, what do you think?
History repeats itself, and not a law, but if more people carried guns, and I'm a nonviolent person, that the shooter could only shoot one or two people before someone turned around and shot him. And history repeats itself. This will happen again.
So you're saying that if the theater goers had concealed carry, that that this would have been much would not have been as bad.
Yes, that's the truth.
Well, there are those making that argument too, Professor Stoykovich, that while Colorado has concealed carry, the movie theater was a gun-free zone.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this has been something that people have said. My experience with this and looking at the literature on this would indicate that once you introduce more weapons into a situation, in most cases, it's not going to turn out better. It may even become worse. It's hard to tell. Each situation is unique. The circumstances are different. The arrangement, the environment is different. So it's very difficult to say with any kind of certainty what exactly would happen. That is clearly a hypothesis that people hold, but I think that once you have more weapons, particularly if people are not trained with those weapons and don't know how to use those weapons, it introduces greater possibility for more violence, not less violence.
Some note that in this particular case anyway, this suspect had thrown smoke bombs and it was hard to see, and he was also decked out head to toe in armor to protect himself.
This was a gentleman who clearly planned this. I mean, he booby-trapped his apartment. He clearly wanted death to reign. He's going to be the object of study and investigation for many, many months to come. We have an initial appearance today in the courtroom out in Colorado. It's hard to figure out this person's motive and mind. People will try to do it. But again, each circumstance is different, and we're going to have to just play these cards out.
Yeah, and before we let you go, anything else that that you think we should keep in mind as this unfolds?
Well, I want people to know that, beginning with your first question, that yes, America clearly is a violent culture. But many of the mass shootings that occurred in the last 20, 30 years were in foreign countries, particularly Finland, Norway last year. 80 children were killed by a gentleman who absolutely, you know, went crazy, so to speak, and went on a wanton terror of violence. So, yes, we have to do something about this. It is just not clear what we can do at the present time.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Stan Stoykovich, Dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, Professor in the Department of Criminal Justice at UW-Milwaukee. Now we welcome in Nick Clark, who is Chairman and President of Wisconsin Carry Incorporated. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. Well, what is your initial reaction to the Colorado movie theater shooting?
Well, obviously, you know, like many people, my initial reaction was, sadness for the incident that took place and the lives that were lost and the lives that were changed forever. And then, you know, very shortly after that, much like the incidences just like this before, sadly, we see that this occurred in a place that was a gun-free zone. Colorado does allow concealed carry, but unfortunately, in this circumstance, the owners of that theater decided that that they were going to put up a sign and keep all the law-abiding people from exercising their right to self-defense in there. And I don't know if anybody in that theater would have been carrying, but I sure think that the humane thing to do is to give people the opportunity to defend themselves. And like Virginia Tech, like Columbine, like all these other mass shootings, they tend to occur in gun-free zones. And this was clearly a very calculating individual. And I don't think it's any surprise that he picked a theater that was a gun-free zone. He planned this out very well, and I think he did that on purpose. Chose a gun-free zone.
Mm-hmm. Professor Stoykovich and others have noted that they think that people with concealed weapons in a movie theater like this or a public venue like this, that introducing more guns to a situation like that just makes it worse, not better. What's your reaction to that?
Well, that's pure speculation. I've researched this topic, and I've never seen a single instance where the law-abiding citizen with a concealed carry permit, a law-abiding carrier, made a situation worse. But we have a multitude of instances where a person, in fact, just last week, there was a situation where there was a person in, I forget the state, but there was a robbery in an internet cafe here in the United States. I don't remember what state it was, but two guys came in, one of them with a gun, and a law-abiding concealed carry holder pulled out his gun and shot the robber. Who turned around and hit him a couple of times and turned around and he hightailed out of there with his partner in crime. I mean, and that's typical. That's typically what you see when you have a law-abiding concealed carry holder. I've never seen a single instance where they, quote, made it worse. I think people make that up because they're just trying to you know, make the debate ambiguous, and it's really not ambiguous.
Let's bring Mark in Romance on. Hello, Mark. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. Joy, you said at the lead into the show that the Americans were shocked and saddened by what happened at Aurora. I'm actually not shocked. We have had so many of these type of shootings that have happened over and over again. This young man had a weapon with a 100-round magazine in it. These are the kind of weapons and accessories used only by SWAT teams and special ops teams. Somehow, the United States has to get real on having rational gun laws. And I say this as a gun owner and a former NRA member. The NRA has subverted and undermines rational laws. For example, banning people on terror lists from getting weapons. NRA is opposed to that. And as long as we have this kind of mentality and cowardice among our politicians, we're just going to have more and more of this.
Yeah. Let me get a reaction to what you had to say from Nick Clark.
Sure. Well, it's categorically false to say that the weapons that were used in this case are just used by SWAT teams and such. The 12-gauge Remington shotgun that the shooter used, that is probably the most popular hunting gun in the country. It's used for duck hunting. It's the most popular choice for duck hunting, pheasant hunting, deer hunting, skeet and trap shooting, sporting clays. A 12-gauge shotgun is, I believe, the most popular caliber in the country. And the, actually, from the reports that I heard, those 100-round magazines and the large-capacity magazines, I heard that the rifle that he was using jammed, and that the shotgun is the one that, is certainly in those kind of close quarters far more deadly. So unless you're talking about taking every shotgun out of the home, out of the hands of every hunter in this country and every sporting clay shooter and every target shooter, which is the gun that was used in this circumstance.
Yeah,
there's
a lot
no
of
way to
yeah.
avoid this.
I'm not positive of all the details. I did hear that the semi-automatic jammed, but what about the argument that no hunter needs a magazine of 100 bullets?
Well, again, I think that's a distraction from the issue here. I mean, you could ban 100-round magazines, and you won't. You know, this was a very calculated individual. He fashioned, and you can make your own. You know, there's we see many, even on the internet, people that convert plastic toy guns to weapons. A gun is a very simple machine. So it wouldn't be difficult for someone to fashion, especially an individual like this, and he fashioned explosives in his home. But it's really a distraction from the real issue here. Does it really matter if it was a 100-round magazine or three 10-round magazines? This guy had four guns. The one that I believe probably did the most damage was the shotgun in those close quarters. And the shotgun, that's the most popular hunting gun in the world. And so what people should be looking at here is, we're not going to, I don't think anybody has the desire or the belief that we could get every shotgun out of the hands of every hunter to make sure that this deranged individual could ever would have been prevented from doing what he did by simply getting every gun out of the country. It wouldn't happen. That's so unrealistic that to suggest that is just it's a mockery of logic.
Coming up after 7:30 in our state capitol report, we are going to be welcoming in Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, and he's going to react to what happened in Colorado. But we're also going to talk about the public hearings going on this week on the training rules for the concealed carry gun permits. Do you have any quick react to those rules that are being discussed?
Yeah, we actually do. It's been frustrating for our organization. The training lobby, there's a lobby out there that for-profit training instructors who really wanted the training mandate. They want the strongest training mandate they can so that they can have a line of customers to their door. The emergency rules that are in place we think are adequate. There's some changes to these permanent rules, one of which limits class size to only 50 people. Now, Wisconsin Carry, we give free training because we don't believe that people should have to pay for-profit instructors, be mandated to pay them for training. And that limit of 50 people, we have, there's college classes and lectures that are much larger than 50 people. We have some venues that have theater seating, large projection screens, audio visual capabilities. And to limit it to 50 people, there's a lot of, I mean, there's thousands of people that take advantage of our free training, and we're not going to be able to offer that to as many people, especially in the low-income parts of Milwaukee. We have classes larger because we have venues that could host them. We have classes larger than 50 people, and that arbitrary limit of 50 people is really going to impact the lower-income people who take advantage of our free four-hour training class the most. So, yeah, we have a great deal of concern with the changes to the rules.
Well, we'll ask him about that. Thank you very much for being with us. Nick Clark is chairman and president of Wisconsin Carry Incorporated. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Quick check of the weather. We do have another heat advisory in effect for southern and into eastern Wisconsin starting at 10 o'clock this morning. It's going to be sunny, hot, and humid. A slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in southwestern Wisconsin this afternoon. Highs ranging from the mid-80s in the north to the upper 90s in the south and east. We are continuing our roundup of different perspectives on the Colorado shooting, and we will try to fit in another call or two with your reaction as well. We've been hearing from a wide variety of guests with different areas of expertise, and we are happy to welcome in now Geraldo Villacruz, Associate Dean of Counseling at Madison Area Technical College, talking about the fear and anxiety that many are feeling in the wake of this tragedy, including parents who are wondering how they might explain this this tragedy to their children. Professor Villacruz, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So this is scary stuff. Kids, like to go to movies, and they like Batman, and this happens. What advice do you have for parents?
Well, you know, this is it's a difficult conversation to have with our children, and I think the first thing as parents that we really need to think about is really how are we responding to the situation, because children really learn from watching their parents. And they take cues from us. And so it's important that when we're watching the news or speaking with family members or friends and processing this event ourselves, that we're modeling a way of coping effectively with an event this tragic. So I think that's really the first step, and for parents to really compose themselves and to think carefully about their own child and where they're at developmentally, and how would it be for the child to have that conversation with each child? And I have two kids myself, and developmentally they're at different places. And so my approach parents really need to be thinking about is how to cater their conversations to fit the age of their child.
Certainly it depends on the age, but generally what can we do to comfort children who might be upset because they've seen news coverage of this?
Well, I think it's important to reassure children first, let them know that they are safe, and that as parents, we're responsible for taking care of their well-being. It's also important to create an open and supportive environment where kids know that they can ask questions. At the same time, it's best not to force children to talk about things unless they're needing to or in the place that they really want to have that conversation. I also think it's very important to keep our routines with our children and have them continue to do what they do day in and day out. We have to remember that as much as events like this are on our minds for children, they're in the moment for the most part. And so what's happening in front of them is really where they're focusing their time and energy. So it's really important to keep those routines. I also think it's important for younger children to really shield them from media coverage, because as we've been talking about in over the last few days, it's rampant on the media. And so I think the more we can shield the younger children from that, because they really can't process that information.
Mm-hmm. And we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Geraldo Villacruz is Associate Dean of Counseling at Madison Area Technical College. Well, thanks to all of our guests who joined us throughout this hour, and thanks to all of you for your input as well. Thanks to Rob Farid, who produced this roundup on the Colorado shooting. Thanks to Bill Martins for on-air direction, and to Naya Mukherjee for on-air production. We will talk about the latest in state politics in our state capitol report coming up after 7 o'clock. And as I mentioned, we'll also hear from Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen after 7:30 to get his reaction to what happened in Colorado and the concealed carry hearings that are going on in Wisconsin this week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.